fear, almost like she was panicked. I tied my tie, keeping it loose around my collar, and watched cars enter the gates, parents drop off their freshmen, and some students head through the parking lot on foot. I was one of the first here this morning. Where the hell was she? Was she already inside?
"Same parties, same girls," Michael mumbled.
"I'm fucking bored."
"I know," Kai let out a sigh. "I'm feeling it too. I need something to happen."
"Something to obsess over," Michael added.
And then Damon chimed in.
"We should kill someone."
Michael snorted. Kai rolled his eyes, and I plucked the cigarette out of Damon's mouth, taking a drag and shaking my head. Michael whipped his uniform blazer at Damon.
"I was thinking I needed the season to start, you fucking psycho."
"Or maybe you need to fall for someone," Kai told him, pulling his jacket out of his Jeep and slipping it on. "I'm ready to have my guts twisted into knots." But instead of looking at Damon or Michael when he said that, Kai met my eyes, a knowing smile playing behind them. I flipped him off, and he just laughed silently.
"Blood would be better,"
Damon pointed out, plucking his cigarette back, taking a drag, blowing the smoke up to the sky, and then flicking the butt off somewhere.
"Come on, we'll pick someone. Someone who deserves it. Stalk her, or him, watch them, plan how we're going to get away with it, dispose of the body."
I shook my head, only half listening as I scanned the parking lot again for M. "And then watch this town lose their minds at the danger lurking right under their noses," Damon said. "It'll be fun." I heard someone breathe out a laugh again, but then silence fell, and no one said anything. Because while no one was ready to do more than entertain the idea as a joke, not one of us doubted that Damon was somewhat serious. He might even already have someone in mind.
"I'm so glad you're on my side sometimes," Michael told him.
But Damon just took out another cigarette and lit it, musing out loud.
"We'd be bound together in the secret forever."
"Yeah, well, there's no one I want to kill," Kai said.
Damon just stared up to the sky before bringing the cigarette towards his mouth again.
"Lucky you," he murmured.
I looked down at him, his gaze still on the clouds, and I couldn't help this feeling in my gut. Michael and Kai needed something to happen, and I already felt it coming. The first bell rang, and we all headed indoors, students racing up the steps and trying to maneuver their way down the halls.
"She'll be in class. She never misses school."
After stopping at the lockers and dodging conversations the others got tangled in on the way down the hall, I finally dove into lit class with my book and binder, looking to see who she planted herself around so I knew whose ass to move. But as I looked, I only spotted Chase Deary and Morgan Rackham in the classroom. No one else. I stopped for a moment, faltering.
Fucking great.
This was what I got for rushing and trying to pretend like I wasn't rushing. Now I got to sit here like a dumbbell, and if she came in and sat far away, I couldn't move, or else she'd know I was waiting for her. And I didn't want her to know I was waiting for her. Continuing to a seat toward the windows, I took out my phone, pretending to look busy. People drifted in, filling the seats, but I didn't look up as Kai, Michael, and Damon surrounded me. As the minutes passed, I barely registered the teacher talking, the papers shuffling, or the nudge on my shoulder to pass the new packets back. There was only one thing I was aware of as I sat there. She wasn't here. Maybe she was taking her time. She hated this class, after all. But as the class wore on and she was nowhere to be seen, I barely heard a fucking word the whole time. We started a new book. The teacher passed them out and finished his lecture, and something was due by the end of the week, but if it wasn't tomorrow, then I didn't care. I didn't give a shit. Where the hell was she? The bell rang, and everyone rose from their seats, piling out of the classroom, but instead of turning left outside the classroom toward my next class, I turned right.
"Hey, where are you going?" Michael asked.
He and I shared government and economics.
"I'll be at practice," I assured him.
And I spun around and headed toward the library. Coach would make me run laps once he found out I'd skipped classes, but I'd run so many laps the past few years, I was kind of perfect at it. I couldn't sit in class right now. My head ached and heated up like a fuse, and I refused to look for her, because even though I told myself it would be just to make sure she was safe, make sure everything was okay, it was because I was pissed. She really went to any length to avoid me, didn't she? Rushing into the library, I made my way through the tables of students working and jogged up the open stairwell all the way to the third floor. I tossed my binder and books onto a table and pulled the group phone out of my pocket, heading down the long aisle and turning right down the fifth row. I reached up to a line of books and pulled out a fat, navy blue text titled "Data Entry and Transcendental Curves of Non-Regular Polytopes," something we know no one on this planet would even be interested in touching. Opening the cover, I punched in the combination to the lockbox inside, stuck the phone in, and closed it, placing it back onto the shelf. The communal phone that recorded all of our pranks had to be hidden somewhere no one would look, and all of us could have ready access to it. Not sure why, since I ended up being the one to fetch it and record most of the videos. But then I heard someone's voice. "That title makes no sense." I turned my head over my shoulder, seeing a glimpse of brown hair through the bookcases. I clutched the disguised lockbox in my hand, pausing. Had she seen what I put in here? I let go, peering through the bookcase and seeing Emery lean against the back wall, her head down with her hair and glasses covering her face. "You weren't in class," I said. Her chest shook, and I thought I saw her lip tremble. But then she cleared her throat.
"Wasn't I?" she snipped. "Wow, you're outstanding. Maybe for your next trick, you can make fire and draw stories in the dirt about those funny holes in the sky that let the light in."
Huh? Holes in the sky? Oh, stars. Was she calling me a caveman? Little shit. I mean, I did do her literature assignment for her. Did she have any idea how hard it was to try to sound like an angry teenage girl with zero sense of humor? Then a tear fell down her cheek, and she quickly wiped it away. I dropped my eyes down her body, taking in the worn and cracked gray chucks, and the skirt 2 inches too short, with the green and navy blue tartan pattern that was 2 years outdated. The glowing olive skin of her beautiful legs, interrupted with the occasional bruise or scrape, which I actually kind of loved because she probably got them from constructing that gazebo and being amazing at something most of us could never do. Her shirt tail and cuffs hung out of her navy blue cardigan because it was too big, and her tie was missing, her blouse laying open an extra button. A lock of hair was caught inside her shirt, laying against her chest. She was here and dressed for school, but she was hiding instead of going to class? "What happened?" I asked. But she just shook her head.
"Just leave me alone," she whispered. "Please."
Please? God, she must be desperate if she was using manners. "We started a new book in class," I told her. She remained quiet, chewing on her lip. "We had a choice," I said. "The picture of Dorian Gray, The Grapes of Wrath, or Mrs. Dalloway?" A little snarl peeked out, and I bit back my smile. "I chose for you." She gently pushed off the wall and started walking, dragging her satchel slowly down the aisle of books as I followed on the other side of the bookcase. "I have your paperback in my binder," I told her. "Don't you want it?" She didn't answer. "Don't you want to know which one I picked for you?" She kept walking, but she was going so slowly, like she wasn't in her body. "I picked something good."
There's nothing in that selection that's good, so just give me the Grapes of Wrath paperback, because things can always get worse, and that choice will really make this day complete. Seriously? How the hell did she guess which book I picked? Damn it. I knew she'd hate all the choices. The first week of school, she went on some rant about the lack of diversity and relevant topics on our reading list, and how the classics were only classic because novels written for a broader audience weren't getting published in the old days. The whole system was rigged, and damn the man, etc. I just wanted her to smile. It would be one thing if I were the one making her miserable, but I had a feeling I wasn't. "Em, look at me a minute." She stopped, looking like the whole world sat on her shoulders. What the hell was wrong? I knew if I asked, she wouldn't tell me, though. "Em," I murmured. "Just look at me." Still, she wouldn't turn. She was right here, but miles away, and my chest ached. "I grabbed you a study guide, too." I reached into my pocket and pulled out the folded packet. "Here." I reached through the books and handed her the guide. It only took her a moment to reach out and finally take it, but when she did, I let it go and grabbed her hand instead. She sucked in a breath and tried to pull away. But I whispered, "Look at me." She stopped resisting, but still refused to meet my eyes. What was wrong with her? As far as my friends were concerned, there had always been something wrong with her, but she looked defeated, like a broken vase barely held together with glue. Emery Scott never looked like that. She looked down, probably at our hands, and I didn't tighten my hold or caress her fingers. I just held her. "Look at me," I whispered. But she choked out a sob, turning her face away so I wouldn't see. "Don't," she demanded. "Please, don't be sweet. I..." But all she did was shake her head, the words lost. Rage boiled my blood, and I wanted to know what happened. Who hurt her? The sight of her crying was like a knife in my gut. But she wouldn't talk to me. Not yet. Maybe never. "Knock, knock," I said. She just sighed, but stayed silent. I knew I was being annoying. I'd punch me if I were her. "Come on, knock, knock." She shook her head and dried her eyes, ignoring me. I hardened my tone, demanding, "Knock, knock."
"Come in,"
she snapped, cutting off my joke. I stood frozen for a moment. How did she always do that? Contrary to popular belief, it's not often I could be outsmarted, let alone repeatedly. But that was clever. I broke out into a laugh, and after a moment, I noticed a small smile playing on her lips that she tried to hide. Releasing her hand, I rounded the bookshelves and approached her, staring down at her bowed head and eyes that still avoided me.
"Look at me," I repeated.
Slowly, she shook her head, but it seemed more to herself than an answer to me.
"Emery."
She stared at the floor and then retreated a step, but I grabbed her face, bringing her in close and rubbing my thumbs underneath her eyes. I wiped away the tears, but more just streamed down. And in that moment, I wanted to do nothing else with my life more than change her world so she'd never feel like this again. God damn it. She tried to pull away, but I couldn't let go. I wrapped my arms around her and pulled her in, hugging her as she gasped. Sobs racked through her as she tensed, but I just held her tight, keeping her standing so she didn't have to even worry about that right now. I couldn't stand this. She had to stop crying. Finally, her arms relaxed, and every fight inside of her melted away. She let her cheek fall into my chest, her arms hanging limply at her sides as she leaned into me, letting me hold her. People passed behind us, but I didn't care what they saw as long as they kept going. I stroked her hair with my hand, my fingers humming at the feel of finally touching her.
Such a big mouth and attitude on a person who was really so soft and small. I dipped my nose into her hair, the scent making my head buzz and the feel of her warming every muscle in my body.
"Let's go," I told her, taking her hand in mine and her bag in the other. "We're getting the fuck out of here."
I pulled her, not waiting for a reply. She dug in her heels, suddenly alert.
"We can't."
"Watch me." I pulled her out of the library, leaving my shit on the table because I knew it would still be there later, and walked down the hallway and out of the school, hearing her nervous breaths behind me as she looked around frantically for teachers or surveillance cameras. For some reason, though, she didn't protest more. Heading to my truck, I tossed her bag into the bed and opened the passenger side door for her. She finally met my eyes, looking so tired. God, the circles around her eyes I was finally able to see in the light of day. When was the last time she'd slept? She opened her mouth, like she might argue, but then she just climbed in. I slammed the door, rounding the truck and climbing in on my side. I almost wanted her to fight. Emery Scott was letting me take her off school grounds during school hours, and she wasn't even demanding to know where. I didn't like this dead look on her face. What the fuck was going on? Starting the truck, I pulled out my phone and dialed as I drove out of the parking lot, turning to head toward the village. She absently pulled her seatbelt across her body, fastening it. Roger Culpepper answered on the other end.
"Hello?
Hey, it's Will. Can you open the doors?"
"It's 9 a.m., he told me.
"Just open the theater," I told him again. "Then you can go back to sleep." I hung up before he had a chance to argue and looked over at Em, who just stared out the window. She'd stopped crying and just relaxed back into the seat, looking sad but comfortable. I stared out at the road as we headed back into town, unable to help the smile peeking out.
"Sorry, Dee. That's her seat now."
Roger had the movie theater unlocked for us when we arrived, and I parked in the alley so no one would spot my truck off school grounds. Emmy didn't ask any questions as I parked her in one of the theaters and left to grab snacks. Culpepper managed the theater and had been here for the nightly festival until a few hours ago. I felt bad about waking him up and dragging his ass in, but ever since my impromptu birthday party last May after prom, my parents took my keys to the theater, so I couldn't let myself or others in. Roger relaxed when he saw it was just one girl. He loaded the film, dimmed the lights, I made the popcorn, and after he left, I locked the doors again and carried a handful of junk food into Theater 3. "Hungry?" I asked, slipping her drink into her cup holder. She looked up at me, her eyes still red, but always beautiful. She shifted nervously in her seat and looked behind her toward the doors, probably scared we were going to be caught.
"It's gonna be okay." I set down the rest of the snacks and picked the popcorn back up as I sat down.
"I know a kid who works in the office. I already called and told him to mark you present in every class today." Plus, I had her turn off her cell phone in the truck, since I knew her brother might be tracking her. My parents threatened me with that from time to time. I stuck some popcorn in my mouth and offered her some, the credits rolling on the film in front of us. But she just stared at me.
"You know a kid?"
she repeated, her usual snark painted all over her face with a big fat brush.
"Of course, you have the whole school wired, because..."
"Thank you would be the correct response," I said, mid-chew.
She gaped at me.
"Try it out," I told her.
She closed her mouth, straightening her shoulders, but after a moment she dropped her defiant little chin and mumbled,
"Thank you."
Sitting back in her seat, she took her Coke and held it between her legs, and after a few minutes I offered her some popcorn. She took it, pecking at her handful like a bird. It was a rotten breakfast, but it was better than eating nothing, and I wasn't sure she'd eaten yet today. The trailers ran, and slowly, I felt her relax next to me, her eyes focused on the screen. The opening scenes began, but instead of watching the movie I'd already seen, I watched her instead. Her eyes moved up and down and all around, mesmerized by the action, and her hand with a piece of popcorn stopped halfway to her mouth as she forgot all else.
"What is this?" she asked,
but she didn't take her eyes off the screen.
"Is this?"
The corner of my mouth lifted in a smile.
"Underworld Awakening?"
she finally said and looked over at me.
"This doesn't come out until January. How do you have it already?"
I cocked an eyebrow, and she rolled her eyes, remembering who I was.
"Of course," she retorted. "Must be nice to..."
I looked back at the screen, clearing my throat extra loudly. She halted whatever insult was on the tip of her tongue and let out a little laugh.
"Thank you," she told me. "Thank you, thank you, thank you."
"Yeah, shut up," I teased. "Just watch the movie." She focused her bright eyes back on the screen, a smile still spread across her mouth that I had a hard time ignoring. I'd seen her in the theater by herself from time to time, so I figured this was her happy place. We watched, and as the movie played, she started to change. Her eyes got bigger, the color came back, and I even heard her laugh once. I held out the Twizzlers and Milk Duds, giving her first choice, but when she picked the Milk Duds, I opened the carton and spilled half in my hand before giving her the rest of the box. I gave her a choice to be nice. I didn't actually want the Twizzlers. I ate, and she ate, and I snuck peeks at her throughout the film, watching her more than the movie. She noticed, because she finally glanced over at me, catching my eyes.
"What?"
she asked, turning her eyes back to the screen. "You're not what I expected," I said. "You like action movies, huh?"
"You don't?"
I laughed. She was back to shaming my anti-feminist remarks. Yay for normal. After a moment, she spoke up, her voice soft.
"I don't think about anything else when I'm watching them," she explained. "They take me away. It's an escape. I like the survival aspect in some of them, too. Ordinary people becoming extraordinary. Being called to do great things."
She rolled a Milk Dud between her fingers, watching the screen.
"Hell hones heroes, you know. I feel it when I watch them."
What did she need to escape, though? I didn't ask, because that would only put her on guard, and I didn't want her to run. "Well, I prefer the classics," I told her. "Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme," we both said at the same time. She turned to me, and I laughed.
"Yes,"
she said, smiling. "Fuck yes," I nodded. "I mean, the muscles from Brussels? Hell yeah."
"Bloodsport," she added.
"Kickboxer," I chimed in. "Great movies. The 80s were the golden age. Ordinary people going to war, battling for honor. I mean, you just don't get movies like Lethal Weapon, Beverly Hills Cop, and Cobra anymore."
"You're the disease, and I'm the cure. Booyah."
But then, Em started laughing, her pearly white teeth gleaming in the biggest smile I'd ever seen on the smart-ass little shit. I pinched my eyebrows together. What? What was she going to make fun of me for now?
"Kickboxer," she said between giggles. "That scene where his teacher gets him drunk in a bar to see if he can fight intoxicated, and he starts dancing? Just the thought reminded me of you there for a minute."
"Why?"
She shrugged. "Big guy, super happy, having fun? I don't know."
She stuck a piece of candy in her mouth.
"Just seems like something you would do."
She sat back in her seat and looked up at the movie again. "Hang around more and maybe you'll find out," I taunted. "I could dance. I could dance really well." She licked her lips, the smile falling, but her breathing quickened. We fell quiet again, the surround sound blasting every fight and explosion, but I swore I could only hear my heart beating with her next to me. The minutes stretched,
and I didn't even know what movie we were watching anymore.
"Why do you like me?" she finally asked.
I looked over at her, repeating Edward McClanahan's words, because it was the only way to explain. "We want what we want." Her chest rose and fell harder, but not an inch of her anywhere moved as she sat there and seemed to sink into her seat. I looked down at her hands, the yellow box in one and the other clenching her skirt. What would she do if...
"Do you still want to hold me?" she suddenly asked me.
I shot my eyes up to hers, but she just stared at the seat in front of her. My heart hammered in my chest, and every inch of me warmed.
"Fuck yes."
Leaning over, I put her cup in the holder and dumped her milk duds into the popcorn container on the floor, taking her hand and pulling her up. I watched as she came over and lowered slowly into my lap. I slid down in the seat, folding her into my arms as she tucked her head into my neck, neither of us giving a damn about the film anymore. I closed my eyes, savoring the feeling of finally having her in my arms, and I had to fist my hands to keep them from roaming, or else she'd probably slap me. But God, she felt good, like everything was lighter when I held her.
"Don't tell you I said this," she whispered in my ear. "But you smell good."
I shook with a laugh, unable to help myself. "Keep being, like, pleasant and shit, and I'm going to find it really hard to keep being nice, Em. What are you trying to do?" She shook with a chuckle, but then she slipped a hand around the back of my neck and whispered against my throat.
"Remember what you said about nightfall?"
Her lips grazed over my skin, feeling me.
"You don't have to be nice. Not until the end of the movie."
The end of the movie. When the lights came up. My dick swelled and hardened, and I threaded my fingers through the back of her hair, fisting it as I nuzzled into her mouth. "Em, Jesus." She came up, both of us tightening our arms around each other as the heat of her lips fell over mine.
"Just until the end of the movie," she whispered.
Sweat cooled my pores, and my cock twitched. I wanted everything at once, and my hands shook so fucking bad, I was afraid I wouldn't be able to control myself. I didn't want to scare her. We held each other, our mouths centimeters apart, as I came in and she inched away, and then she came in, and I held back, playing. And then finally, I caught her bottom lip with my teeth. She whimpered, and her mouth sank into mine, every nerve in my body firing as her warmth hit my tongue and her taste filled my head. God, I'd waited for this, but as soon as my mouth moved over hers and her body filled my hands, I wasn't in a hurry anymore. I slowed everything, slipping my hand under her skirt and squeezing her thighs as she repositioned herself and straddled me. I wanted this to last forever. "So soft," I panted over her mouth. God, her lips were soft. I kissed her, both of us getting faster and harder, and when she came in for more and more, I was high. My dick strained against my pants, and I gripped her thighs, pressing her down on me. She moaned, diving down to my neck and yanking my tie looser so she could get to more of my skin. My head floated, the feel of her mouth blazing through my body with the sweetest pain. We nibbled and teased each other, and I wanted to take things off and see her. I wanted to touch her and kiss her in other places. But I had to go slow. I didn't want this to be over, and she scared easily. My cock bulged, and I felt it almost there. I grabbed her head, holding her to me, and stopping her from moving, but not letting her go. She grinded on me, nibbling and licking my mouth. I sucked in a breath. Shit, I gasped. I dug my fingers into her thighs, the theater spinning around us. Kissing. Only fucking kissing, and I was about to come already. She breathed hard into my neck, and I could feel her heart racing too. I hated it when things ended up being exactly how you hoped they'd be. I leaned in and kissed her gently, starting slow again and taking my time. She might regret this tomorrow. She was in a weird mood today, and maybe I was an action movie, here to help her escape, but that wouldn't fly when I finally took her into bed. I wanted inside her head first. Because contrary to whatever she thought, this shit wasn't ending when the lights came up.
Chapter 13. Emery. Present. He'd changed, and I didn't like it. It had been over a day since he took my underwear in the pool shower, and he still hadn't spoken to me. Will was never so angry. Not that I was an expert on him, but I was the temperamental one. He was the lover. I might have been able to get help from him eventually, but I didn't have time to wait for it. Iden's mind games, Taylor's leering, Rory's scowls. I wasn't sure why I'd remained protected, but I wasn't counting on it lasting. Will could get revenge on me all he wanted, back in Thunder Bay. It was time for a plan. I walked down the hallway and entered the game room, spotting the pool cues on the wall. I took one down, pausing as I looked at all the paintings adorning the maroon wallpaper on the walls. This place was like Dracula's castle with all its nooks and treasures, but sad and dying too. Why would people send their kids here? Why not a beach with sun and warmth? Depression only made moods worse. Was this place really supposed to help? I gazed at the paintings of ships and pirates, of sea battles and sea creatures. What was the connection? Did the person who previously owned the house enjoy the ocean? Or were we close to one? A sudden weight anchored me to the ground, a new possibility I hadn't considered. If this was an island, I was fucked. I needed to get to the roof. It was the best view I was going to get. I shook my head. There were too many problems, and I wasn't solving any of them. It was Thursday, and my co-workers at the firm would have reported me missing by now, right? Missing one day would be odd for me, but two? I wasn't friendly with any of them. No one had a key to my apartment. But they'd contact the police if I wasn't showing up to work or answering my phone, right? Not that it would do any good. No one would find me here anyway.
You walk around bold as brass, don't you? Someone said from the dark corner in the room.
I startled, turning around and searching for the source.
Like you have nothing to fear, he added.
I twisted my head right again, finally seeing long, black-clad legs. He slouched in the chair at the far corner behind the chess table. His face was in shadow. I inched around the pool table, toward the door, but kept my eyes on him.
But you forget, he panted. We're all in here for a reason.
Taylor. There was movement, and I stepped closer, my heart starting to hammer. He'd been sitting there the whole time, watching me. Why was he out of breath? I fisted the pool cue in my hand as I approached.
Ask me what I did, he said, and then continued with a loaded tone. Ask Rory what he did. The underwater wax museum at his parents' lake house. It was so lifelike.
A shiver ran up my spine. A wax museum? Lifelike? What the hell did that mean? And then I saw him. I dropped my gaze, seeing his cock in his hand as he jerked it. I sucked in a breath, rearing back. He stroked up and down, quicker and quicker, and then I spotted my blue panties. They were wrapped around his dick as he masturbated. My heart sank into my stomach, and I glared at him as he moaned, his eyes falling closed as my lace rubbed against his skin and the muscles in his arms flexed. What the? I stepped back, sickened.
We want to leave, he told me, but we'll never really be free, Emery.
He looked at me again.
You can take him home, but he can never go back.
And he zoned in on me, jerking harder and harder. My stomach rolled, but I couldn't move, completely paralyzed as I watched him. Until he begged in a whisper,
Suck on your finger, deep throat it for me, suck it hard.
I couldn't make my legs move, and I didn't notice I wasn't breathing until my lungs ached.
I bolted from the room, hearing his deep, dark laughter echo behind me as I ran. I wasn't even sure where I was going until I found myself in the gym, ignoring Micah on the weights as I jumped on the treadmill, starting the machine and running in my bare feet. I needed to run. I needed to be too exhausted to care. Will gave him my underwear? I gnashed my teeth together, my nausea turning to fury. Micah popped up his head, watching me for a moment, but then left the weights and started sparring with the dummy. My body cooled with sweat, and I upped the pace faster and faster until I thought I couldn't keep up just to work off the steam and worry and rage. I wasn't just going to sit here for 4 weeks. I wasn't going to count on anyone to protect me. I may not be able to run, depending on the elements, so I couldn't count on that as my only option. But I could do something. 9 years ago, I decided to sit and wait, ride it out, and then run. I wasn't doing that anymore. I hit the emergency stop button and jumped off the treadmill, panting as I walked over to Micah. "Show me some moves," I asked, breathing hard as I removed my glasses. He stopped and straightened, scowling at me.
"Why would I do that?"
"What do you want in return?" He grinned, and I arched an eyebrow at him. I was pretty sure he didn't want that.
"A sandwich," he said.
I snorted, not missing the intended insult about a woman's place. But it wasn't a horrible idea. I'd have an excuse to be in the kitchen with access to the food. Even if someone kept an eye on me, I could hoard away something. It might come in handy if I needed to run or hide for an extended period of time. "A Philly cheesesteak sandwich?" I clarified, upping the ante. It wasn't kosher, so I couldn't eat it. It was one of the few rules I followed. But I'd make it for them. That kind of sandwich would take longer than 10 minutes to cook, giving me plenty of time in the kitchen. His face lit up.
"Really?"
I held up my fists, widening my stance as my answer. He smiled and took up position opposite of me, bidding me to attack.
"Let's do this."
2 hours later, and I was sweaty and hot, but not tired, strangely. I felt energized, and I wiped off my face to cover up my smile. Incredible! Stranded for 2 days with 5 men, 4 of them strangers, and you'd think I would feel some danger. It wasn't that I didn't. I just wasn't unaccustomed to it. It was familiar. I walked toward the door, glancing behind me at Micah and Rory wrestling on the mat. Micah pinned him down, laughing, but one look from Rory and Micah let his guard down. The skinnier guy grabbed him, flipped him over, and tried to choke him, but they were both laughing as they tried to get a hold of each other. I shook my head, continuing out the door. "Have fun, survive." And then I stopped, remembering The Lord of the Flies, a disturbing classic novel and one of the only ones I actually enjoyed in high school because it was so dark and possible. The boys who crash-landed on a deserted island without any adults had 3 rules. Have fun, survive, and keep a signal fire going. It only took a moment to decide. Shooting off, I glanced around me to make sure I was alone and headed outside into the driveway. The empty fountain sat in the middle of the circular drive, and I looked overhead, seeing a clear sky for once. I wasn't sure this would last, especially if rain soaked the wood, but I had to try. Gathering sticks, branches, and even twigs, I hauled armful after armful to the empty fountain and threw them in, creating a massive pile. I returned to the edges of the driveway, gathering more, and built the pile higher, so it blazed bright and big, the light hopefully visible in the dark and the smoke visible in the day. I ran farther to the tree line, picking up more kindling, and ran back, throwing it in. But an arm shot out and grabbed my wrist. I jerked my head, seeing Will in his jeans and t-shirt, green eyes void of the boy I remembered. I yanked my wrist away and pushed him back. He grabbed my arm, and we both fought, me trying to escape and him trying to stop me. "Someone is bound to notice it," I growled.
"No one will notice it," he told me, "and you're mistaken if you think he's going to let you light that in the first place."
Struggling, I pushed him away from me, and he let me go. Yeah, I know. It was a long shot, and maybe without Mommy and Daddy's money, there was no point in them even trying to escape, because if they left here, they could only go home to the very people who sent them here in the first place. They weren't going to give up their names, hide in Brooklyn, and be pizza delivery boys. But I didn't belong here. I had a job, and I didn't need anything from anyone. "What did you do to get sent here?" I asked him. "I mean, your parents actually sent you here? Aren't you their favorite or something?" He just held my eyes, refusing to answer. It had been a while, maybe a year or more. Micah said Rory was the last new arrival 7 months ago, and even he had already been home once, only to be sent back. What was Will doing with himself? He was going to have the life. "You're 26, I told him. "What comes after this? Where do you go? Do you suddenly grow up?" I searched his eyes. "If it hasn't happened by now, it's not going to. You do you, and I'll do me." He stepped in, looking down at me.
"I hear you're making dinner," was all he replied with. "We're hungry now. Go cook."
I flashed a glare. "Excuse me?" I shoved him in the chest, pushing him back. "I'm not serving you. I'm not sitting at your table. You can go and screw up your life without a care. And also, you gave that sleazebag my underwear," I said. "You son of a bitch." A grin teased the corners of his mouth, but he simply turned back to me, holding back his smile. "But then you didn't need them, right?" I taunted, calming my voice. "Still have my pink ones from after homecoming? Have you used them a lot, or did you just lube up with your own tears over the years?" He crouched down and got in my face with his eyes on fire.
"What makes you think there weren't lots of hot, wet panties over the years?"
Spinning around, he left, and I burned a hole in his back as he disappeared into the house. "Believe me, Will Grayson, I know exactly where you've been."
Chapter 14. Emery. 9 years ago.
"They have mac and cheese, burgers, turkey tetrazzini," Erica Fain told some girl ahead of me in line, "and chicken pot pie today. But I recommend the chicken sandwiches. They're good and spicy." No, they aren't. The freshmen were the only ones who still hadn't realized where those cramps in the middle of fifth period were coming from. The other blonde, who looked like she could be her sister, except Erica Fain didn't have a sister, just stood there, not looking over the selections that Fain listed off.
"It all sounds fine," she replied. "Whatever you recommend."
Fain grabbed the chicken sandwich wrapped in foil and brought it to her. The other girl held out both hands, feeling for the item. I narrowed my eyes, watching her. Slowly, and keeping her eyes focused ahead, she took the item and set it on her tray herself, albeit a little clumsy, like she couldn't see. Realization dawned. This was Winter Ashby, bitchy Arian Ashby's kid sister. She was blind, I'd heard. Well, hopefully she was nicer than her sister. When did she start here? I rarely ate lunch and we weren't in the same classes, so I hadn't seen her before. They moved down the line, but not before an attack of conscience hit me, and I plucked the chicken sandwich off her tray, quietly replacing it with a burger without her or Fain noticing. She wouldn't know who to thank, but that was okay. I grabbed a burger and a banana before reaching over and taking a bottle of water, adding it to my tray. An arm came around me and took my necktie, threading it through long, beautiful fingers, vein bulging through the back of his hand.
"Nice tie,"
he whispered close to my ear. My heart leapt, and I stopped breathing for a moment. His breath tickled my hair.
"Thank you for wearing it."
I couldn't turn around and look at him, because I was sure my face was 10 shades of red. He'd put his tie on me after the movies when he'd dropped me at home, and I wasn't going to wear it, but he'd taken another bad day and made it good. I liked wearing something that reminded me of it. He dipped down, slipping his hand around my waist and breathing into my neck.
"Emmy."
Heat covered my body, hearing him say it just like he'd said it when I straddled him in the theater. "Please," I begged, throwing off his hand, "just go back to your table." I looked over to their regular seats, seeing Damon watching us while pretty girls loitered around. "Lots there to keep your attention."
"That's not what I want,"
he taunted, squeezing my waist again. I moved down the line, looking around to see if anyone else was watching us.
"Don't worry,"
he said, letting me go and adding a brownie and chocolate milk to my tray. All they see is me fucking with you. They'd never suspect.
That you were serious? He grinned to himself and dumped a bag of pretzels and some French fries on my tray.
No, that you like me.
He reached around my other side, his cheek on mine as he reached for a pudding and fruit cup. He blanketed my back, pressing into me, and my heart beat so fast. I turned my head, feeling his lips close to mine. Please, just go sit down. But the words were lost, and I didn't finish the sentence. Sweat cooled my neck, and I finally clenched my tray, getting a hold of myself. Just go sit down, I snapped, and then blinked, seeing all the shit on my tray. And stop putting all this food on here. You're not eating with me.
It's for you, he told me, taking out his wallet. You're pale. All of that's kosher, right?
I growled, starting to put the food back, but he grabbed my tray and handed the cashier the money.
I'm going to need my tie back, he said, tonight.
I can't, I told him.
You will.
He took his change and handed me the tray.
I'll pick you up at the end of your block at 11.
I can't, I said, louder this time. But he came in closer, looking down at me.
And then I'm taking you to my house, just us. I want to have a Mission Impossible marathon with you tonight.
A Mission Impos... I snorted, despite myself, and quickly looked away, trying to hide my smile. God, he was an idiot. I wanted to go, though. I stood there, shaking my head absently. I can't, I mouthed. Martin would find out. My grandmother would need me. We had school tomorrow. I'd let things happen. He'd only make me regret. But he came in, taking his tie around my neck and rubbing it between his fingers.
You come to me, he said, or I'll come to you.
I got an A on that Lolita study packet. Over a week late, and I still got an A. And the best part was, I didn't even turn it in. I was tempted to. I just couldn't do it, though. Every educational success I would have had after would have been marred. The rest of my life would have been over. A fraud, a cheat, a lousy example to my children. All because I faked one English assignment. That was how neurotic I was. Unfortunately, the long arm of Will Grayson stretched all the way into the teacher's gradebook and changed my 0 to 100%, despite the missing assignment. Not very inconspicuous. I would have been fine with a 98, safe with a 92 even. I'd inform Mr. Townsend tomorrow that the grade was wrong, if I didn't forget. I walked across the empty locker room and opened the shower curtain, stepping in and hanging my towel on the hook. Turning on the water, I dipped my already wet head under the spray, my skin breaking out in goosebumps at the feel of the hot water. It was only 4:30 in the afternoon. I still had hours before I was supposed to meet Will, and even though I'd spent the rest of the day and my private time sneaking into the pool for a workout afterward, trying to tell myself I wouldn't care when 11 rolled around, and I'd left him waiting at the end of my block, it hurt inside a little at the idea of blowing him off. It shouldn't hurt, right? I never agreed to go to his house tonight. He never even asked. Just another guy making you feel obligated to show him how grateful you are for his attention. I pumped some shampoo into my hand from the dispenser on the wall and washed my hair, trying to hurry. I still had to make dinner, do homework, and I'd promised my grandma we'd watch a movie in her room tonight. And I still wanted to get to the gazebo tonight to get some work done. Will could come to me, if he found me. I rinsed my hair and conditioned, pumping some soap into my hand and scrubbing the pool off my body. But I stopped, feeling the nubs on my legs. Maybe I should shave again. I mean, if he found me, I... Then I shook my head and stood up straight. For Christ's sake, get it together. I finished washing and ducked my head under the water again, rinsing the conditioner out of my hair as I stared ahead. But then a shadow moved on the other side of the shower curtain, and I froze. It stopped, standing there, the dark form looming just outside. My heart skipped a beat. Only the emergency lighting remained on, since there wasn't supposed to be anyone staying after school for any sports or band today. So I blinked, as if that would clear my vision. Shit, I needed my glasses. I could see okay without them, but I was nearsighted. Hello? I called out. Who is that? Forgetting to turn off the shower, I reached over and grabbed my towel, holding it up to my body. "Martin?" I said. The shadow peeled back the curtain slowly, and a lump swelled in my throat as Damon Torrance stepped into the shower with me. "What the hell?" I barked. But he just came closer, closing the curtain and approaching me with a towel around his waist, his smile coming into view.
"Martin," he repeated, "why would your brother be stalking the girls' locker room?"
"Why are you?" I backed into the wall, the shower spilling over my shoulders and drenching the towel I clasped to my body.
He shrugged. "Practice just ended. I needed a shower."
"The team isn't practicing tonight." I shoved him in the chest, pushing him away. "You've been here. Were you waiting for me?" But he just came right back in, pinning me to the wall.
"Shh."
He stroked my hair, pressing his body into mine as he breathed down on me. My knees started to tremble, and I clenched my thighs, suddenly feeling like I was going to wet myself. I jerked away, pushing at him with one hand and holding my towel with the other. "What do you want?" He pinned my wrist to the wall at my side as he smiled down.
"I want to know what he sees in you. Maybe I'll see it too."
My stomach twisted into a knot. I'd rather fucking die. I looked up into his black eyes and smelled that shit he smoked. A scream lodged in my throat. Just scream. Scream. There was no one here to hear me. And even if there were, Martin Scott wouldn't believe me. I was going to pay for this either way. "Get out," I gritted through my teeth. "Get the hell away from me."
"I thought you'd have more fight," he said, studying me. "You're kind of disappointing."
"What, you can only get hard if I'm scared?" I was scared. "Leave." I glared up into his eyes and then slapped him, but he shot out for my hands, trying to get a hold of them as I fought. My towel fell, and he caught both my wrists, bending my arms at the elbows and holding my hands between our chests, using his weight to keep them pinned. "Leave," I growled.
"Then scream," he demanded instead.
I locked my jaw, pretending I was tough, but I was breathing a mile a minute. He looked into my eyes, the water falling over both of us as he searched my face.
"Why don't you scream?"
"You wouldn't understand." I gathered it was new for him. He prayed because it got him off, but it ruined all of his plans when he wasn't the victim's first rodeo, didn't it? Because it wasn't the blood he was after, but the fear. It wasn't the sex, but the power. His eyes trailed down my neck and slowly down my arm, narrowing. "I don't scream because..."
"Because screaming doesn't help," he murmured. "Does it?"
My heart thundered in my chest, but I remained frozen, staring up at him as he looked at my body and the bruises in the shapes of fingers wrapped around my upper arm, the scrapes on my legs and the blue and purple on my shoulders.
"Because you get tired of being the victim," he said,
like he was thinking out loud.
"And it's easier to just let it happen."
He raised his eyes, meeting mine again, and my throat stretched painfully as his words burrowed into me. He loosened his hold, but I didn't run.
"To just pretend we're in control of everything happening to us," he told me.
He blinked a few times, his demeanor completely changed, a troubled set to his brow. My chin trembled.
"Until you can't remember who you were before you started lying, even to yourself," he added. "Until you can't remember ever smiling when it didn't fucking hurt."
Tears filled my eyes, and I ground my teeth to keep my shit together. Abuse can feel like love. I remembered his words from lit class. Starving people will eat anything. His eyes fell down my body again, his head cocking and taking the purple and red on one side of my torso and the others on my thighs. He didn't have any marks that I could see, but there were other kinds of pain.
"Will is like that," he said,
his voice softening, somber now.
"Isn't he?"
"Like a smile that doesn't hurt." I nodded.
"Easy, normal, peaceful," he told me. "The only thing in my life untouched by anything ugly. Nothing has tainted him. He's the one thing that's still beautiful and thinks the world is beautiful and believes people are beautiful and all that shit."
Yeah, but I couldn't say it out loud because it was hard enough holding back the sob.
You can't take him away from me,
Damon told me, stepping back and letting me go. And in that moment, I understood exactly what his problem was. He didn't dislike me. He resented Will liking me so much. One day of wearing a school tie, because I loved the way he made me feel that I had to have a piece of him with me every moment, was nothing compared to the years Damon had relied on Will to be his little beacon of hope that the world was still a pretty place.
You know it won't work anyway, Damon pointed out. His family is one of the wealthiest in the country, Emery. His life is so far beyond your understanding, and vice versa. You know you have no place in Will Grayson's homecoming picture.
I dropped my eyes, slowly sinking down and picking up my soaked towel, holding it over my body.
I know, he continued. Hurts to hear it, but it's true, and you know it. And what's more, it's pointless, because you know how you are. Even I know how you are. The whole school knows. He won't fit, because you're committed to being miserable, and you'll just drag him down.
I fisted my hands, wanting to scratch him up good. I was not miserable. I was... My heart sank, and I looked away. He was right. What had I done since the beginning but push Will away? I knew how it would end, so I knew better than to let it start.
He wore you down, Damon went on, and you need a release. I get it.
He approached me again, water spraying over his body as he hovered over me, imposing in a different way now that still scared me but didn't frighten like before.
So take it for what it is, he whispered, and release with me.
My stomach swirled. Huh?
His infatuation will end, so pretend you're the one in control, Damon taunted. Call it for what it is, because it's sure as shit not love. It's a crush. Hormones. Instant gratification. Acting out.
No, it wasn't. Was it? I mean, was he right? Was Will just a scratching post? Would he ever be anything more? I knew he wouldn't. I could do it with anyone. I could do anything I wanted to. Will wasn't the only person I could escape with.
You feel it, don't you? Damon asked. That need kids like us feel that Will never will? That need to destroy anything good? Because every man for himself. And if you can't beat him, then join him.
He came in and caressed my hair, and my chest ached, like something wanted to tear out of it. And I just wanted the pain to end. Even for a minute, I wanted the control.
That tingle between your thighs, he panted. That's telling you to just let it happen, because in the backseat of my car is where you'll be in charge.
I trembled, tears pooling, but when he pressed his body into mine, I gasped, my eyes falling closed.
And when you're done with me, he breathed out over my mouth, you'll get to be the first to walk away from something that was never going to happen anyway. You can do that with me. Don't play with his heart. Use me instead.
I'd be in charge, because I'd never love Damon. I'd never be broken.
I'm good, he whispered, holding my eyes. I'm really good, Emery, and I'll make it worth it and save you the pain of him, as long as you quit now.
I planted my hands on his chest, entertaining what it would be like, what it would be like to feel him on top of me, what it would be like to kiss that mouth. I thought about what it would be like for a moment, and then I blinked long and hard, clearing my throat. He was good, I'd admit that. No wonder he got as much ass as he got, because if all anyone wanted was sex, Damon Torrance was gifted at manipulating someone's mind, putting the right glasses over someone's eyes to make them see the world how he wanted them to see it. God help the woman who ever fell in love with him. I was tempted. I was tired of myself, and it was alluring, the prospect of not being me for a night. But Will liked M. I'd rather live in that memory of the movie theater forever than ever make another one with anyone else. I pushed Damon away. And you call yourself his friend. He stood there, faltering for a moment, but then he chuckled, recovering.
His best friend, he pointed out. Maybe he sent me to test you.
I rolled my eyes, wrapping my towel around me and shutting off the water.
Or maybe not, he said,
and I looked over to see his eyes falling down my body slowly.
You would have liked it, you know. I think I might have liked it, actually. It certainly wouldn't have been a chore.
Asshole. Get out, I said. He nodded, turning around.
Well, I tried.
And then he looked back at me over his shoulder.
Has Will seen the bruises?
I tensed.
Be prepared for what's going to happen when he does, he warned, and what can happen to him if he goes up against a cop.
He walked out, and I stood there, my shoulders slowly slumping with the weight of his words. Will could never see the bruises. The moon hung low, casting the only light into the kitchen as I unloaded the dishwasher. I stacked the glasses and sorted the silverware, refusing to look at the clock that chimed on the wall, the pendulum inside, ticking away the seconds.
You should get to bed,
a voice said. I faltered, hearing Martin behind me. He approached my side and reached down, picking up a couple of plates out of the washer and handing them to me. I took them, bracing myself. I will after this, I murmured. Promise. I turned and put the plates in the cabinet, waiting for his temper. Always waiting.
Your grades are looking good, he told me instead, and the gazebo is coming along. People compliment me on it.
He loaded the dirty bowl and fork into the dishwasher, and I rinsed out the sink and wiped off the counters.
You still have a year to start applying, but I'll try to help with anywhere you want to go to college, he said. Okay.
I blinked away the sudden burn in my eyes, nodding. These moods were harder to take sometimes than the violence. I wiped down the stove, setting the spoon rest back in place, and waiting for him to leave. But then I felt his fingers brush my hair, and I stopped, standing there, but still not looking at him.
I'm sorry, you know,
he choked out, and I could hear the tears in his throat. I locked my jaw, trying to keep it together.
I do love you, Emmy.
He paused.
That's why I want you to go. You'll be the one thing in this family that's not a fucking failure.
I closed my eyes. Please, just go. Please.
It just builds up,
he explained at my back.
All day, every day, until I can't see straight and I'm confused and blinded and ready to jump out of my skin. It's like I can't stop it.
And when he comes home, he takes it out on me, because I won't tell and I won't run.
I don't even know what I'm doing when I do it, he mumbled. I just can't stop.
A tear fell down my cheek, but I didn't make any noise.
You know this isn't me, he said. Right.
I nodded, finishing the stove.
Remember when I used to let you ride in the front seat?
He said, laughing a little.
Even though Mom said you were too little, so I'd wait until we got out of the driveway and then I'd let you crawl up front.
I forced a laugh. Yeah. I looked at him over my shoulder. As long as I promised not to tell Mom you were running a casino night in the basement when they were in Philadelphia that time. He chuckled.
Is it strange that someone who loved breaking the rules became a police officer?
No, I told him. They make the best cops. They know all the tricks. He grinned.
True.
And what better place for a criminal to hide? I didn't say that out loud, though.
I got you something today.
He turned and dried off his hands, walking to the table where a brown bag sat. Reaching in, he pulled out a large hardcover book and came over, handing it to me.
It's used, but it caught my eye today when I walked past the library's sidewalk sale.
Greatest Deep Sea Dives. I smiled and started flipping through it, evidencing my interest. It's great, I chirped. The photography is so beautiful.
I thought you'd like it.
He turned and grabbed his thermos and lunchbox, and a glimmer of relief hit me, knowing he was getting ready to leave for the night shift. I drew in a welcome lungful of air. I love coffee table books, I assured him. Thanks for remembering. He came over and kissed my forehead, and I stilled, only relaxing again when he'd backed away.
Lock up tight, he said, and sleep well. I'll be home at 7.
Bye. He left, heading to work. But it wasn't until I heard his car engine fade away down the street that I finally moved. Putting the grocery bag in recycling, I carried my book, checking the doors and making sure lights were off, before heading upstairs to my room. I left the lamp off and trailed to my bookshelf, pushing the row of books upright again and slipping in the newest addition to my collection. Barcelona, an architectural history. 101 Most Amazing Caves. Always Audrey. 6 Iconic Photographers. 1 Legendary Star. West, the American Cowboy.
History of the world map by map. I backed up, reading all the other spines on the two shelves, heavy with more than just the weight of the hardbacks. I liked to put them on the shelf whenever he gave me one. It pleased him to see me display his gifts, but also, it was like I'd accomplished something. It was like a trophy. When the bruises faded, and I had nothing else to show for what would never fade in my head, I had this. One book for every time I stood back up, again and again and again. He'd bought me other things over the years, presents every time he'd spent his anger and the guilt crept in, and those things were also said about the room, things I'd leave behind when I left, so that when he came in here, he'd see and remember everything, but I'd be gone. I dropped my eyes. At least, that's what I told myself. My grandmother slept down the hall, the record player in her room working its way to the end of side A, and I wanted her to live forever. But sometimes, Martin would be so much worse if she weren't here. She was the only person who loved me. I needed her to stay alive. But she was in pain. And if she were still alive when I was supposed to go to college, I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave her with him, and I'd have to stay here. I hated myself for that thought, but while I didn't want her to go, I needed to get out of here. What the hell was I going to do? I hugged myself in my cardigan, only wearing my sleep shorts and tank top underneath, and turned around to close my curtains. But someone sat there, in the corner of my room in my chair. I gasped, jumping back.
Hey?
Will said. My eyes widened, and I breathed hard, my heart still lodged in my throat. What the hell? I dashed to my window, plastering my cheek to the pane to get a view of the driveway and make sure my brother was gone.
No candle in your window tonight?
He asked, but I wasn't listening. Are you insane? I scanned as much of the street as I could see through the tree outside, but I didn't see Will's truck. Hopefully he'd parked it far away. How the hell did he get in here? My brother just left. He could have seen him.
You have to light a candle, Emmy.
I never light a candle, I growled in a whisper so my grandma wouldn't hear. I don't give a shit about Evernight. You have to leave. He sat there, wearing jeans and an army green T-shirt that brought out the color of his eyes, even from here. His hair was relaxed, the gel from the day about gone, and laying across his temples so beautifully.
What did I say? He said in a low voice. If you don't come to me, I'll come to you.
So I didn't show up down at the end of the block. As important as a Mission Impossible marathon was, I had other things to do, and he neglected to ask if I was free tonight. He stared up at me, his arms resting on the chair, and I forced a scowl, despite the shot of excitement through my body at seeing him.
I can't believe Emery Scott has a poster of Sid and Nancy on her wall, he joked. A couple of obnoxious junkies, one who could barely even play his guitar.
Please, I asked, ignoring his teasing. You can't be here. He rose slowly, never taking his eyes off mine.
Or maybe you have a thing for doomed romances.
I stepped back as he stepped forward. Just leave, I told him again. But he kept coming.
You're so pretty,
he whispered. I shook my head, curling my fingers into fists.
But I'm getting really tired of you looking at me like that,
he said, his expression suddenly serious,
like I can't be trusted.
Well, could he? And even if I could trust him to have good intentions with me, I wasn't ready for this. I didn't want him involved in my life. I was doing him a favor. I loved the theater, and I'd treasure the memory forever. But Damon was right. Yesterday was fun. We were done. You need to leave, I said again. His eyes sharpened on me.
And I'm getting really fucking tired of you saying that.
His jaw flexed.
What's the problem? Yesterday was amazing. Why do you always have to think so much until you've twisted something that was good into something bad?
I don't owe you anything, I bit out. And I didn't invite you in, so just leave. Get out. He stopped, the glare in his eyes almost as heart-stopping as a smile.
You know, I was nicer to you than I had to be.
He squared his shoulders.
You know how many girls I can get like that?
He snapped his fingers, and the funny, laid-back, sweet protector from the last several days was gone. Believe me, I was well aware that he could get any piece of ass he wanted,
and had already. I wasn't the first to touch or kiss him. Well, I should just thank my lucky stars that all my relentless hard work following you around like a pathetic puppy just to get your attention actually paid off, I yelled, calling him out fucking good. He chased me, not the other way around. He took a step toward me, but then someone called my name, and he stopped, both of us glowering at each other. My blood boiled, and I could see his neck glowing with a light layer of sweat already. Everything was hot. It was dark, we were close, and my bed was right there. My clit throbbed once, and I stopped breathing. Emmy? A small voice called again. I blinked, releasing the breath I didn't realize I'd been holding. Emmy! My grandmother called again. Will's rigid stance relaxed a little, and his eyes softened. I dropped my gaze and shook my head, managing no more than a whisper. Please, just leave. I left the room, turned right, and headed to my grandmother's bedroom, the late evening breeze making her white curtains billow. She tried to push herself up in bed, her bulky pink robe wrapped around her. Hey, hey, I said, rushing up and lifting the cord to the oxygen mask so she wouldn't snag it. I got it. I'm here. She sat up farther, leaning back on her pillows as I helped her take off her mask. I put it up, listening to her breathe and making sure she was all right for now. Are you okay? I asked. I just needed water. I picked up her cup and refilled the water, handing it to her as I held the straw in place. You forgot to light my candle, she said, as she took a sip and peered up at me. I stared at her, my brow still tense from a moment ago. Everyone was out to try my patience today, it seemed. Don't give me that look, she warned. Go light it. It's my last, no doubt. I pursed my lips, knowing there was no way to argue with that. She may not be here next ever night. Fine. I turned and walked to the mantel, grabbing the matches we kept for the fireplace she no longer used, and took one of her midnight patchouli-scented candles to the windowsill. I set it down and lit it, making sure the flame was visible through the glass. Such a stupid tradition. Although, there was something more alluring about it now, since Will told me more of the story. Every October 28, since 1955, a year after the Cold Point murder, the residents of Thunder Bay lit candles in their bedroom windows for Reverie Cross on the anniversary of her death. While the basketball team made their annual pilgrimages to Edward's grave, everyone else honored his victim, convincing themselves that if they didn't, not even death would withhold her vengeance. If your candle was still lit by morning, you were in her favor. If not, something bad would befall you before the next ever night. It made about as much sense as throwing salt over your shoulder to ward off bad luck. I watched the reflection of the candle flickering in the window and then reached over, closing her other window. If she wanted the candle to stay lit, then she'd have to do one night without her beloved wind. I cast one quick glance out the window, wondering if Will had left. Walking over to her side, I took the cup and set it down, smoothing her hair away from her face. 82 years old, and she looked 500. Except for the eyes. In her eyes, she still looked 16, and secretly planning to steal the old man's car for a joyride with her friends. Do you have a boy here? She asked. I stilled. No, grandmère. Mentus, she retorted, calling me a liar in French. Qui c'est? Who's who? She jerked her chin behind me, and I whipped around to see Will standing in the doorway. Damn it, I told him to leave. But he just walked in, smiling gently.
Allô, he said. Je m'appelle Guillaume.
I gaped at him, hearing French spew out of his mouth like it was nothing. Guillaume was the French variant of William. Seriously? Frankly, I'd been surprised he even spoke English. Figured him for someone who communicated solely in emojis. But my grandmother smiled.
Parlez-vous français?
Un peu,
he said, measuring about half an inch with his fingers.
Très, très peu.
She laughed, and that same smile that made him look like he was built for hugs spread across his face. He looked down at her, and I rolled my eyes.
Un peu, my ass.
My grandmother had been born here, but her parents came from Rouen, in France. They fled in the 30s under the growing threat from Germany. And even though she'd grown up speaking English at school here, her parents made sure to preserve her heritage. In turn, she raised my mother to speak French as well, I didn't speak it as well as I'd like, but I understood it. More French poured out of Will's mouth as he talked with her, and I listened.
I hope we didn't wake you. He looked thoughtful. Your granddaughter was giving me the verbal beating I deserved. I apologize.
My heart pitter-pattered a little, but then my grandma laughed.
Perhaps deserved, she said, and perhaps she has my short temper.
I leveled her a look. Settling back down into her bed, she took her mask off the hook, holding it.
It was a long time before I met someone who could take me, she explained. That's the thing about broken people, Guillaume. If we ever give you our heart, then you know that you deserve it.
Tears welled in me, but only for a moment.
He was patient with me,
she told him, a far-off look in her eyes. My grandfather. Long since passed, but they were well and truly in love. At least she was happy for a while.
Now go, she told us, starting to put on her mask. I'm tired.
Like hell she was. We could watch a movie or something. Grandmère? But she shouted,
go, be young.
I wanted to laugh, telling her that I was 43 at this point and just over it. But it would make her happy if she knew I was happy, so... She put her mask on, and we left the room, me leading the way back to mine. Once inside, I closed the door and watched Will set a candle on my windowsill. It was the one that sat on my grandmother's dresser. He must have swiped it. He pulled out a lighter from his jeans and lit it, positioning it center as a small glow came to life, burning against the black night. He turned, the light of the flame flickering in his eyes, as he looked over at me.
No movies tonight, then?
He asked, walking around my room. I shook my head, not meeting his eyes.
And I think, he continued, moving toward me, even if you could leave, you wouldn't anyway.
Taking a step, I moved away from him, both of us circling each other. Again, I shook my head.
Because you're suspicious of everything good,
he told me. I remained silent, continuing to move away as he moved in.
And it won't end when you go to college or leave this town, Em. Nothing will change. You still won't have good things.
I tried to swallow through the lump in my throat, but I couldn't.
Because you'll still be you, he said.
I breathed in and out a few times, and then the words spilled out before I could stop them. I want to let this happen, I told him, finally looking up and meeting his eyes. Part of me really does, Will. You know why? He stared, and I barely noticed that we'd both stopped moving. Because as soon as it was over, I know I'd never have to hear from you again. I didn't blink as I held his eyes, his beautiful greens sharpening and his spine straightening. Yes, fucking you would be the one way to get rid of you. It was almost tempting. But then I watched his lips tighten as his eyes glistened. He fell silent, looking taken aback, and I faltered, watching my words work their way through his head, slicing a bloody path that I immediately regretted. He dropped his eyes, stuck the lighter into his pocket, and let out a resolved breath.
Why are you so mean?
But he didn't really want an answer. Turning away, he left my bedroom and headed down the stairs, and in that moment, my insides crumbled, because I knew I'd gone too far. I didn't want this. I didn't want him to go, because I'd never hear from him again. I'd go to school tomorrow, pass him in the halls, but this time, he wouldn't look back at me. I'd gone too far. Racing after him, I jogged down the stairs, leapt over the last few steps, and pushed the front door closed again, just as he was opening it. I'm sorry, I blurted out, gripping his t-shirt at his waist and dipping my forehead into his back. I'm not. My voice shook. I'm just not a happy person, Will, and you're right. I never will be. Tears lodged in my throat, and I blinked long and hard to keep the tears away. I didn't want to cry in front of him again. He stood there, still, only the beat of his heart pulsing through his body. I'm not right for you, I told him. And not because he was rich and popular and I wasn't, but because he made my life better. I looked forward to him. What did I give him?
Noted, he replied coolly. Now let me go.
I squeezed my eyes shut at his cutting tone. He wouldn't be back. And something started to come over me, like a curtain falling or lifting, and for once in my life, I refused to stop myself. I was so cold. And he was so warm.
It was like an invisible rope pulling me to the edge that it was beyond me to control.
You wanted your tie back, I whispered.
His back moved with each breath.
Keep it, he told me, or throw it away.
He reached for the door handle. You want something of mine instead?
I blurted out.
He stopped, gripping the handle but not turning it.
My heartbeat raged, and I knew I was going too far again. I'd regret this. I'd hate him later. He'd hate me. My brother could drop by on his rounds to check on me. But I didn't give a shit. I wanted to be here now.
Pushing my cardigan over my shoulders, I pulled it off my arms and held it out in front of him.
This, perhaps? I asked softly.
But then I let it slide off my hand to the floor.
No, it won't fit you, I guess.
He stared down at my discarded sweater, and I could barely breathe. But he wasn't leaving, and I kept going. Taking the hem of my tank top, I pulled it over my head. The air hitting my bare breasts, every inch of my body alive with awareness.
Or this, I murmured, holding my white top in front of him.
His chest rose and fell harder, and it was like he was frozen, unable to move. I leaned in, pressing myself into his back, and dropped the shirt, whispering up into his ear.
That's too small, too. I told you, Will Grayson, we don't fit.
He exhaled hard, looking over his shoulder.
There's a part of you that's my size, I'll bet, he teased.
I bit my bottom lip to keep my excitement in check. I slipped my hands inside his shirt and circled his waist, running my fingers over his stomach and up his abs. Heat pooled between my legs, and I nearly groaned, feeling his soft, tight skin, the muscles and curves of his body, and things I wanted my mouth on now, not my hands. There was nothing about Will Grayson that wasn't perfect.
God, I want to take off your shirt, I told him.
He planted his head on the door to steady himself, and I could see the sweat on his temple. He looked exhausted. I almost smiled. After a moment, he straightened, and I took that as my cue. Lifting up his t-shirt, I pulled it over his head, dropped it to the floor, and came in, circling my arms around his waist and pressing my skin to his as I took a chunk of his back between my teeth.